8. Joseph Adams listened to the partial text of the speech up to the point where the dark young Yance man had ceased feeding the script to the vac, and then, when the sim became rigid and the cameras, at the precise moment, shut down, he turned to the man beside him, the author, and said, "I take my hat off to you. You're good." He had almost been captured himself as he had stood watching the simulacrum of the protector Talbot Yancey, delivered with absolutely the proper intonation in the exact and correct manner, the text modified and augmented, meddled with, by Megavac 6V from what it had received. Even though he could see Megavac 6V, and although this was not visible, could sense the emanation of the reading matter directed by the vac toward the simulacrum, could in fact witness the true source which animated the purely artificial construct seated at the oak desk with the American flag behind it. Eerie, he thought. But a good speech is a good speech, whoever delivers it. A kid in high school reciting Tom Paine. The material is still great, and this reciter doesn't falter or stumble or get the words wrong. The vac and all these main men standing around see to that. And, he thought, so do we. We know what we're doing. "Who are you?" he asked the strangely capable young Yance man. "Dave something, I forget," the man said, almost mystically absorbed, even now that the sim had become inoperative once more. "You forget your name?" Puzzled, he waited, and then he realized that this was merely an elliptical way by which the dark young man was telling him something, that he was a relatively new Yance man, not yet fully established in the hierarchy. "Lantano," Adams said. "You're David Lantano, living in the hot spot near Cheyenne." "That's right." "No wonder you're black." Radiation burned, Adams realized. The youth, eager to acquire land for a domain, had gone in too soon. All the rumors, passed back and forth in the idle hours of evening by the worldwide elite, appeared true. It had been far too soon, and physically young David Lantano was suffering. Philosophically, Lantano said, "I'm alive." "But look at you. What about your bone marrow? Tests show there's not too much impairment of red cell production. I expect to recuperate, and it's cooling daily. I've gotten over the worst part." "Riley," Lantano said, "you should come and visit me, Adams. I've had my leadys working night and day. The villa itself is almost complete." Adams said, "I wouldn't go into the Cheyenne hot spot for a pile of poscreds 10 miles high. That speech of yours shows how much you can contribute. Why risk your health, your life? You could stay here in New York City, live in a connept of the agency until..." "Until," Lantano said, "the Cheyenne hot spot cooled down enough in 10 years, 15 years... and then someone grabbed it ahead of me." My only chance, he was saying, in other words, was deliberately to go in prematurely, as has been attempted in the past by Yance men in the exact same position before me. And, so often those premature investments, those hasty, anxious entries into still hot areas, meant death. And not a mercifully quick death, but a gruesome, slow deterioration over a period of years. Viewing the dark, in truth, severely scorched youth, Adams realized how fortunate he himself was to be fully established. His villa was long built, his grounds were fully planted, green throughout, and he had entered the West Coast hotspot south of San Francisco at a safe time. He had relied on footmen reports, bought at great cost, and look how it had all worked out, in contrast to this. Lantano would have his fine villa, his vast stone building made out of the rubble, the concrete that had been the city of Cheyenne, but Lantano would be dead. And that, according to the Recon Dis Inn Council's ruling, put the area up for grabs once again. It would be a rush by eager Yance men to get in and acquire what Lantano had left behind. An ultimate and, to Adams' pathetic irony, the youth's villa, built at such cost, at the expense of his life, would go to someone else who did not have to build, supervise a gang of leadys day after day. "I presume," Adams said, "that you get the hell out of Cheyenne as often as is legal. 12 out of every 24 hours, according to Recon Dis-In Council law, had to be spent within the new domain area." I come here, I work, as you see me now. Lantano returned to the keyboard of Megavac 6V. Adams trailed after him. As you say, Adams, I have a job to do. I expect to live to perform it. Once more, Lantano seated himself at the keyboard facing his copy. Well, at least it hasn't impaired your mind, Adams said. Smiling, Lantano said, Thanks. For 1 hour, Joseph Adams stood by while Lantano fed his speech to Megavac 6V. And when he had read it all, and then, as it emerged from the back of the sim, had heard it actually delivered by the dignified, gray-haired father figure Talbot Yancey himself, he felt overwhelmingly the futility of his own speech. The dreadful contrast. What he himself gripped in his briefcase was beginner's prattle. He felt like slinking away into oblivion. Where does a barely grown, radiation-burned, unestablished new Yance man get such ideas, Adams asked himself, and the ability to express them, and the know-how as to exactly what the Vax treatment of the copy would result in, how it would ultimately emerge as spoken by the sim before the cameras? Didn't it take years to learn this? It had taken him years to learn what he knew. To write a sentence and, after examining it, know approximately, that is, sufficiently accurately, how it would, in its terminal stage sound, be. What, in other words, would appear on the TV screens of the millions of tankers subsurface who viewed and believed, were taken in day after day by what was fatuously called reading matter. A polite term, Adams reflected, for a substance lacking substance. But this wasn't strictly true, as, for instance, young Dave Lantano's speech here and now. It preserved the essential illusion. In fact, Adams had grudgingly to admit the illusion of Yancey's reality was heightened. But your speech, he said to Lantano, isn't just clever. It has real wisdom, like one of Cicero's orations. Proudly, he traced his own work to such eminent ancient sources as Cicero and Seneca, to speeches in Shakespeare's history plays, and to Tom Paine. As he stuffed the pages of his copy back into his own briefcase, David Lantano said soberly, I appreciate your comment, Adams. Especially coming from you, it means something. Why me? Because, Lantano said thoughtfully, I know that despite your limitations, he shot Adams a keen, quick glance then, you have sincerely tried. I think you know what I mean. There are things, easy-way things and bad things, that you've scrupulously avoided. I've watched you for several years, and I've seen the difference between you and most of the others. Bros knows the difference, too. And despite the fact that he axes rather than coaxes much of your stuff, he respects you. He has to. Well, Adams said, has it frightened you, Adams, to see your best work axed at the Geneva level after getting that far? Do you find it merely frustrating, or... David Lantano scrutinized him. Yes, it does frighten you. After a pause, Adams said, I get scared, but at night, when I'm not here at the agency but alone with my leddies in my villa, not when I'm actually writing or feeding it to the vac or watching the sim itself. Not here, where, he gestured, it's busy, but always, whenever I'm alone... He was silent then, wondering how he had managed to confide his deepest proclivities to this young stranger. Normally, one took care as to what one revealed about oneself to a fellow Yance man. Any personal info could be used against one in the incessant competition to be the speechwriter for Yancey. In effect, the Yancey itself. Here at the agency, Dave Lantano said somberly, in New York... We may compete against each other, but underneath we're a group, a corporate body, what the Christians used to call a congregation, a very meaningful, special term. But then each of us at 6 p.m. goes off in his flapple, crosses an empty countryside to a castle inhabited by metal constructs that move and talk, but are, he gestured, cold, Adams. The leddies, even the advanced types who dominate the council, they are cold. Get a couple of your retinue, all the leddies of your household staff that you can cram into your flapple with you, and go visit every night. I know that the smart Yance men do that, Adams said, are never at home. I've tried. I've arrived at my domain, eaten dinner, and then gone right out again. He thought of Colleen, and then, when he had lived, his neighbor Lane. I have a girl, he said deftly. A Yance man, or I suppose you would have to say a Yance woman. We visit and talk. But the big front window of the library of my domain... Don't look out over that fog and coastline of rocks, David Lantano said. That stretches south of San Francisco 100 miles, one of the most bleak on Earth. Blinking, Adams wondered how Lantano had known so exactly what he meant, his fear of the fog. It was as if Lantano had read his deepest mind. I'd like to see your speech now, Lantano said. Since you've given mine about as thorough a study as possible... And for you, Adams, that's rather thorough. He glanced toward Adams' briefcase, especially alert now. Adams said, No. He couldn't show his speech, not after the strong, fresh declaration he had just now seen and heard. The reading matter concocted by David Lantano, which had emerged from the Yancey's simulacrum so effectively, dealt with deprivation, hit at the heart of the tanker's main problem area, at least as he understood it from the reports of the Polcoms and the tanks which the Estes Park government, the apparatus there, received and made accessible as a feedback to all Yance men, in particular the speech writers, their sole source of knowledge as to how well they were getting their reading matter through. Reports from the Polcoms on this speech of Lantano's, when it had been coaxed, would be interesting. It would take at least a month. But Adams made a note of it, noted the official code designation of the speech, and promised himself to be alert for the feedback responses as they emerged from the ant tanks all over the world. West Dam, anyhow. And possibly, if the response was good enough, the Soviet authorities would take the top copy of the spool from Megavac 6V, which contained the speech, give it to their own VAC in Moscow to program their own sim. And in addition, Bros in Geneva, if he wished, could sequester the spool, the original, not the top copy, and decree it officially and formally to be primary source material from which Yance men the world over were mandatorily to draw on for later reading matter. Lantano's speech, if it were as good as Adams thought it to be, might become one of those few rare eternal declarations incorporated in permanent policy. What an honor! And the guy was so damn young. How can you face it? Adams asked the dark, young, new Yance man, who did not even have a domain, yet who lived in a lethal hotspot by night, dying, being scorched, suffering, but still doing this superb job. How can you openly discuss the fact that those tankers down there are systematically deprived of what they're entitled to? You actually said it in your speech. He remembered Lantano's exact words as they had issued from the firm-jawed mouth of the Yancey. What you have, Talbot Yancey, the synthetic and, in a sense, actually non-existent protector, told the tankers, would be telling them in a couple of weeks, when the tape had passed Geneva's scrutiny, as of course it would, is not enough. Your lives are incomplete, in the sense that Rousseau had meant when he talked of man having been born in one condition, born brought into the light free, and everywhere was now in chains. Only here, in this day and age, as the speech had just pointed out, they had been born onto the surface of a world, and now that surface, with its air and sunlight and hills, its oceans, its streams, its colors and textures, its very smells, had been swiped from them, and they were left with 10-can submarine, figuratively, dwelling boxes in which they were squeezed under a false light to breathe repurified stale air, to listen to wired obligatory music, and sit day-long at workbenches, making leadies for a purpose which... But even Lantano could not go on here. Could not say, for a purpose you don't know. For each of us here above to augment our retinues with our entourages which wait on us, follow us, dig for us, build, scrape, and bow. You've made us barons in baronial castles, and you are the Nibelungen, the dwarves in the mines. You labor for us, and we give back reading matter. No, the speech hadn't said that. How could it? But it had admitted the truth that the tankers were entitled to something they did not have. They were the victims of robbers. Theft had been committed against all the millions of them, and there had been no moral or legal remedy all these years. My fellow Americans, the Talbot Yancey simulacrum had said gravely in its stern, stoic, military, leadership, fatherly voice. Adams would never forget this moment of the speech. There is a certain ancient Christian idea which you may know that life on Earth, or in your instance, beneath Earth, is a transition, an episode between a life that came before and an eternal other kind of life to follow. Once a pagan king in the British Isles was converted to Christianity by the image of this life being the short flight of a nocturnal bird, which has flown in through one window of a warm and lighted dining hall of a castle, for a moment passed above a scene of motion and talk, of tangible fellow life, the comfort of being within a place inhabited by others. And then the bird, in its flight, has gone on out of the lighted dining hall, out of the castle once more through a second window, into the empty, black, unending night on the far side. And it will never see that lit-up, warm hall of murmur and motion and fellow life again. And here the Yancey, in all its pomp and dignity, the authority of its words that reached so many, many human beings in so many anywhere-in-the-world tanks, had said, "You, my fellow Americans in subsurface shelters, you have not got even this moment to cling to, to remember or anticipate or enjoy this short flight through the lighted hall. Brief as it is, you are entitled to it. And yet because of a terrible madness 15 years ago, a hell night, you are doomed. You are paying every day for the insanity that drove you from the surface, exactly as the whips of the Furies drove out our grandparents from the original garden eons ago. And this is not right. Somehow, one day, I assure you, the alienation will end. The abridgment of your reality, the deprivation of your rightful life, with the swiftness said to accompany the last trump's first sound, this terrible calamity, this inequity, will be abolished. When it comes, it will not be gradual. It will hurl you all, expel you, even if you resist, back to your own land that is waiting for you above, awaiting your claim. My fellow Americans, your claim is staked and we guard it. We are the securing agents only for the present. But everything up here will disappear and you will come back. And even the memory, even the idea of us who are up here now, will forever vanish." And the Yancey simulacrum had finished. "And you will not be able to curse us, because you will not even recall that we existed." God, Adams thought. And this man wants to see my speech. Seeing his reluctance, David Lantano said quietly, "But I've watched you, Adams. You can take some credit." "Damn little," Adams said. "You know, all I've ever tried to do, and it was right, but just not enough. I tried to assuage their doubts as to the necessity of their situation. But you, my good God, you've actually called it not merely a necessity that they have to live down there, but an unjust, temporary, evil curse. There's a big difference between my using the Yancey sim to persuade them that they have to go on because it's even worse up here on the surface. It's germs and radioactivity and death. And what you've done, you've given them a solemn promise. You made a compact with them, gave them your word, Yancey's word, that someday it would all be justified." "Well," Lantano said mildly, "the Bible does say it is God who shall justify." Or some such utterance. I forget exactly. He looked tired. More so even than Lindblom had. They were all tired, all of their class. What a great burden, Adams thought. The luxury of this way we live. Since no one makes us suffer, we have elected to volunteer. He saw this on Lantano's face, as he had seen it, or something like it, on Vern Lindblom's. But not on Brosis, he thought suddenly. The man with the most power and responsibility feels the least, if he feels any, weight. No wonder they all trembled. No wonder their nights were bad. They served, and knew it. A bad master.